This is episode 399, dated Monday, July 14th, 2025.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hi, I'm Bob Branco. Welcome to Sports Roundtable. And this is episode 399, dated Monday, July 14th, 2025. Allow me to first introduce our panel members that we have so far. We start out with Peter Alchul.
Typical summer day in Coos Bay, Oregon, 65 degrees, a breeze, the sun is out. It is a glorious time to be in Coos Bay, Oregon.
We are partly sunny, partly cloudy. 80 degrees-ish, and a typical summer weather hanging in there here in New England. Mitch Pomerantz.
Good afternoon, good evening. Mitch Pomerantz from Pasadena, California. It's 80 degrees and mostly sunny here, and I'm drying out from all the rain that I got to deal with in Dallas, although I came back with probably a cold from the airplane, because that's just what happens frequently when you're on an airplane. But otherwise, things are going well here, and good to be back on the show today.
Reverend Michael Garrett.
Welcome to Missouri City, Texas, where it is 90 degrees, and I'm just now hearing thunder overhead, so we're in for a shower this afternoon, and I'm glad to be back, too, from Dallas, but I'm back in Missouri City, Texas.
Okay, Don Wardlow.
Hi there, from Jersey, where it's also 90 degrees, no sign of any thunderstorms.
So we are still waiting on Luther King. As a matter of fact, we are scheduled to have a guest today. So when he comes in, I'm sure he will acknowledge his appearance and we'll welcome him. That would be Mark.
So Bob, I just got an email from Mark saying he's still stuck at the doctor's office. And if the doctor doesn't release him quickly, we will penalize him for appearance interference and fine him accordingly.
Anyway, let me thank some people for making Sports Roundtable possible. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do. Also to our media sources, thank you for airing us. It's very much appreciated. And of course, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions. Thank you for archiving our programs on my website. If you want to find these archived programs, just go to www.brancoevents.com, arrow down till you get to Sports Roundtable Podcasts, click on those, and you'll see most of our archives from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
And also, let me acknowledge Diane for being our facilitator today. Thank you very much. And of course, Brad for being our streamer. And because we are live streaming at the moment, let me give out my email address for those people who would like to send us their comments about our show. That would be bobbranco93@gmail.com, bobbranco93@gmail.com. Well, I was going to start out by giving Mitch my condolences because the Dodgers have hit the skids, and maybe he can elaborate as to why that is.
Well, I can do that, except we did beat the Giants the last two games, so we did take the series. And I was going to actually make your day. Rafael Devers in the series was 0-4-16, and he's hitting under 250. He has a sore back and something going on with his leg. He is still DHing, but they are talking when he gets healthy, moving him to play first base. But He almost did us in yesterday in a game we shouldn't have lost. Well, we should have won it in nine innings, but Tanner Scott gave up a pinch two-run home run, so we had to win it in the 11th. But Devers lasted bad. He had a line drive that our our center fielder yesterday, at least for the last couple innings, James Outman caught. But what happened with the Dodgers is I think everybody's ready for a break. I told Michael before the series started, when we played Houston, or when they played us here in L.A., that I didn't think the Dodgers would fare too well. I thought we might win one, but we had a couple of bullpen games, and you know, we really only have three starters, and we're now up to four, and that's so I didn't hold out a lot of hope for doing well with Houston. I was a little surprised we lost three in Milwaukee, but they were hitting well, and we were not. Ohtani, Betts, and Freeman are really kind of in a funk right now. Ohtani hits a home run once in a while. Freeman drove in two runs yesterday with a couple of hits, but the top three in the order are not hitting up to par for them for what they normally do. So, but we did win Saturday and Sunday, and so I was looking at my stats for the last couple of years, and we are 58-39 at the All-Star break, which is a better record than we had either 2023 or 2024 at the same time. So we got to get our pitchers back. Glasnow is back, and he's going to start Friday. Blake Snell may be back by the end of the July. So things are turning around, and we've got a 5.5 game lead, for Pete's sake.
We left all of our hits in L.A. because we lost 5 out of 6 after asked to go into L.A. But we're still 56-40, so it's, you know.
You're talking about Houston, right, Mike?
Yes, talking about Houston, the Astros. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, getting back to Devers, Mitch, I don't think the Red Sox miss him right now. We've won 10 in a row, and that's amazing.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah. So does that mean, and I don't know what the record is, does that mean that the Red Sox may be buyers at the trade deadline rather than sellers?
Let me throw out some names of pitchers that have been rumored to come here. And, of course, they're rumors, but sometimes rumors are based on something that somebody hears, I guess. That's what starts rumors. Pitchers' names that I've heard include Spencer Schwellenbach from Atlanta. I also heard Joe Ryan from Minnesota, Griffin Jacks from Minnesota. Troy, I hope you're listening. We may get Jacks or Ryan from you guys.
I can't believe Atlanta would be a seller. That's just so shocking to me. And Bob, by the way, do you know who was broadcasting this weekend? Was it the two Wills, or did they have somebody?
No, it was one of the Wills. Will Middlebrooks was in the booth along with Cooper Borgman.
And you were talking about them interviewing, I think, a football guy.
They had a football guy in the booth yesterday.
I said to you privately, and I'll say it here, sometimes, no matter how incongruous an interview may appear on the surface, there may well be a method to somebody's madness. Somebody could very easily have said to Will and Boardman, you must interview this guy, no matter whether you want to interview him or not. The worst interview I got stuck with, well, I didn't personally do it. I personally told my partner, I am not touching this interview with a 39.5-foot pole. But we were ordered to interview Tonya Harding.
Oh.
And our team, the Charleston River Dogs, was having a bat night. And we had Tonya Harding brought in on bat night. And the thing that went along with the interview, and we normally didn't like do interviews if they were conditional, but this one, we were ordered not to connect Tonya Harding and bat night in any way. And I said, Jim, this is your interview. I'm not getting anywhere near it. And Jim, to his credit, he got the interview done without getting us fired. So, but I didn't.
Somebody had a really warped sense of humor to have her appear on bat night.
That's my former boss, Mike Vec, and I love the man yet after all these years.
But as far as rumored trades, okay, I mentioned some pitchers that the Red Sox are rumored to get. Here's a good one for you that I heard. How about if the Red Sox traded Jaron Duran for Matt Olson. I'm hearing that.
Well, yesterday, Rick Monday was talking about the trade deadline and commented that aside from a little bullpen help, since Yates and Tanner Scott are not living up to their salaries, mentioned Jaron Duran, and, you know, the Dodgers have a bunch of guys down on the farm who the Red Sox might be interested in. So he was even talking about sending him, picking him up, because the Dodgers could use a little more outfield help. So I heard his name yesterday.
Well, the Red Sox are buyers, and I've heard that Craig Breslow is not going to trade one of his major league star outfielders unless he gets back a number two starter or somebody of that caliber. He's not going to get prospects.
If he got Matt Olson, does Matt Olson play first or third?
First. And we need a first baseman, actually.
Well, for now you do, but Tristan Casas is going to come back one of these days. He didn't permanently, you know, destroy himself, as far as I know. And if you get Olson, you know, how long of a contract is he on? You know,
Olson has about 4 or 5 more years left on his contract, and I would be thrilled if we obtained Olson. We'd trade Casas in the offseason, what we would do, I would suppose.
And see what you might be able to get for him. I wouldn't know, but that's what these guys, that's what they live for, the general managers of the world.
But we're at the All-Star break, and the landscape of baseball, to me, it's a crapshoot right now. Are there really any super-duper dominant teams in baseball at the moment? I mean, people can talk about Detroit, I guess, or maybe Houston and the Dodgers. But you look at that American League East, it's a crapshoot. Toronto is surprising a lot of people, and people are speculating that that's not going to last. I mean, I thought the Yankees were going to win the division, you know.
I still hope and pray for that, but I just, you know, but you know what? Besides this, and until or unless we get our guest, would you allow me a couple of minutes to talk about the draft, and then we'll go back to where we were? Would that be all right?
Yes, okay. Go ahead.
Because the draft was last night, and myself and Luther King in particular, we're talking quite a bit about who's going to get drafted where. The biggest surprise is Ethan Holliday, who everybody was saying was going to go number one. He went to number four on the draft board. He was taken by his father's team, the Colorado Rockies. Ethan is.
I was wondering if that was Matt Holliday's son.
That's his son, and it's Jackson. It's Jackson Holliday's brother. And Jackson is the rookie star with the Orioles. Then you have Caden Kent from Texas A&M was a first rounder, and he is the son of Jeff Kent. And here's the one I like best of all, even though they're not famous names. They're both second rounders. In 1999, Wes Obermueller from University of Iowa was drafted in the second round. And he played major league ball with the Royals and the Brewers. His son, Cade Obermueller, was drafted in the second round from the University of Iowa. I mean, it's already humongous odds for a father and son to make it in the bigs, but to be drafted in the same round, in the second round, that's astonishing.
Toronto has two infielders who are sons of fathers who were in the bigs, Bichette and Guerrero Jr. And they used to have Kevin Biggio in that same infield too.
That's already at the big league level.
Don, I want to ask you a question though before you go on.
By all means.
One of the top draft picks on the board was the Dodgers third base coach's son, Grady Ebel, out of Corona High School, east of us by about 30 or so miles. Do you know if he was drafted in the first or second round? I don't remember the young man's
name. He was drafted. What round? I don't remember. It was one of the first two, and it definitely was the son of Dino Ebel.
Or Dino Grady. I'm doing all right. Yeah, Dino Ebel. Good.
Grady might have been the son's name, and I think our guest might have joined while we were talking about this. We have somebody, Mark's iPhone. I'm guessing that's Mark Kestisher.
Mark, are you with us?
I believe I just unmuted. Sorry about the tardiness, fellas.
That's quite all right, Dan. You had no control over that situation, Mark.
That is a good point.
Welcome back.
I appreciate it.
I told the partnership that your doctor was going to be penalized for appearance interference.
Yeah, that is a 5-minute major penalty.
That's right.
My fault for trying to do yard work after the NBA finals. I encountered some really nasty poison ivy and got a really bad stuff happened while I was in Las Vegas.
Poison ivy.
I would have called the doctor's penalty delay of game.
I know, exactly. Well, somebody's going to get a fine in the pay envelope, but I don't know who it would have been. It won't be me. No, actually, I'm going to get fined because I'm getting a doctor's bill out of it.
Oh, well.
Mark, we're talking about the landscape of baseball now that we're at the halfway point of the season. The All-Star game is tomorrow night. The home run derby's tonight. I was pointing out earlier that there is no real dominant team that I'm really scared of in MLB right now. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I think so. Look, the Dodgers have that dominant lineup, and when they're healthy, they're just so scary. And, the Yankees probably just overachieved in the early going. The Tigers, have, if people haven't paid attention, I know you guys have, but, a lot of folks who don't jump onto baseball till, September might be surprised that they've probably had the most days this year as the best team in baseball. But I think it is to your point. Yeah, there's no like world beater. Maybe that's a good thing. There's a lot of good teams out there, a lot of good stories. I think, the Cardinals are such a heritage team that you see them high in the standings. You're like, oh yeah, of course, it's the St. Louis Cardinals, but that was a terrible team last year. And I think coming into this year, not a lot of people gave them much hope in that division. So I think your premise is accurate. And also, for me, I don't work as much baseball as I used to. As a consumer of baseball, I enjoy it, much like the NBA with us getting two small markets at the end. I really enjoyed that.
Mark, let's talk. Go ahead, Mitch.
Well, go ahead, Pete. Well, I was going to say, Mark, I have an NBA question, and I'll preface it by saying that I understand you're a journalist, so I don't expect you necessarily to agree or disagree. A lot of us are not real happy with LeBron for opting into the contract rather than taking, say $20 million less and giving the Lakers a little cap space. And as one of our local talk show hosts said the other day, we embraced Magic. I was a huge Magic fan. We embraced Kobe, but we're happy that LeBron spent a few years with us and took us to one championship, but we've never really embraced him and his unwillingness to take lesser money. It leaves a bad taste in a lot of our mouths. What is the sense around the NBA regarding what he did or maybe should have done?
And a two-pronged thing. The first part is, I agree with you, as someone who's not from Los Angeles, from the opposite coast, it was pointed out to me and, felt pretty obvious after that he never really is like a quote-unquote true Laker. He's a superstar, one of the greatest players of all time who's, wearing the purple and gold and we assumed would finish his career there, maybe I assumed and shouldn't had, and we'll see what happens when it's all said and done. That's one part. The other part is, LeBron said it early in his career, he was going to make $1 billion. He wanted to be a $1 billion guy. He accomplished that, but he doesn't need anybody. Money should not be an object. And I don't know if it's an ego thing to be, paid amongst the highest, opting in at $52 million, which, it's almost, that's like a cheap date now compared to some of these max contracts that are going out. But you're right. He could have, helped out the Lakers, took a little less. I don't think that was ever an option. I just think what it you know, having spent a couple days in Vegas and I got to work one of the Lakers games, and you probably saw the Dave McMenamin piece that, you know, has been out there on social media. It just feels like there's this awkward dance going on, you know, between one of the greats of all time who's wrapping up a career and a franchise that's already starting to look past that. And not that they don't appreciate him and need him this year, and he's still a very valuable piece, but this was going to happen eventually. And so it feels like two sides digging in. And I don't know if anyone's really going to quote unquote win here. And then on top of it, I know I'm going long winded, but then on top of it is the current CBA structure, which really, you know, is prohibitive for teams to stack big contracts and get better in ways other than, you know, finding guys that are, you know, can help you, can play a good 20, 25 minutes, but probably aren't going to make the difference, especially at the West.
Yeah, and I heard about the McMenamin post, but I didn't hear any details, but he's pretty connected to the Lakers, having reported, been a reporter with them off and on for some time. So thank you.
And for those who didn't hear it, basically, I'll keep it to the 30-second limit, is, you know, LeBron's agent put out a very cryptic memo when he opted into the contract for LeBron. And it was cryptic in that he wanted them to get better and he's all about winning championships. And so it kind of put the onus on the Lakers, like, all right, I'm going to play for you. This might be my last year. What are you doing for me? And then at the same time, you know, no one's talking. Like, we're left to read the tea leaves, and guys are digging in and they're prioritizing Luka more than him now. So it's really odd, an odd smelly smoke coming out of LA. And I don't know what the bottom line is, but I would be shocked if he's not in a Laker uniform opening night. But then I read today that four teams reached out, you know, that would be interested in trading for LeBron. So we'll see. It's always drama.
Yeah. That's what I was going to point out too, that there are four teams interested in trading for it. And the big one is, I'm hearing, is Cleveland. You know,
I heard that too. Cleveland. I don't know if the Warriors are one of those teams, or, you know, I actually shouldn't even speak about it because I really don't know, but Cleveland would be, the natural kind of ending spot, the kind of full circle again moment.
Back to Cleveland.
That's what I'm hearing.
Back to Cleveland for a third time, huh, Michael?
Yeah.
I'm coming home 3.0.
Peter, you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mark, since you were so heavily involved with the NBA playoffs, I'd be curious to know that you've been away for a while. What's your sort of overall take of the sort of the arc of the playoffs? And from my perspective, it was a really unusual playoff series until you got to the finals. And even then, it potential might have been a final, except that ultimately Oklahoma City did win in the seventh game. It was an interesting playoffs. What do you sort of take from the playoffs that just finished?
Yeah, I we were talking about it in Las Vegas before we started Summer League, because, you know, everybody hadn't seen each other in a whole 2 weeks, you know, since the draft. And, you know, 2 weeks of perspective, say, you know what, that was actually a pretty good playoff. There were a couple duds. I think, you know, the Pacers and Tyrese Halliburton's heroics were one thing. Oklahoma City was so dominant during the year and got into 2 7-game series was another thing. Obviously, the Knicks bring a lot of eyeballs for obvious reasons. And, you know, they had a chance going deep and then fired their coach. And so you had that whole narrative going on while we were getting ready for the start of the finals. And then we had championship series between two tiny markets and yet two outstanding fan bases who were starving, you know, for an opportunity at a championship. And for the most part, you know, the 7 games delivered. You know, we've had the Warriors-Cavs is going to be remembered very fondly in 2016, I should say, in LeBron's chase down block, Kyrie's shot. But the reality was most of those games were blowouts in that series. We didn't, you know, outside of Game 6 and a little bit of Game 2, you know, we had some really interesting games. I thought personally, and probably agreed upon with some of my colleagues, was that was as fun of a playoffs in total that we could remember in quite some time.
And the other thing that struck me is, and you know, I guess since I follow the Knicks more than anybody else, how many 20-point deficits got overcome
Yeah.
During the series. It was quite a lot. And I, you know, that never happened 20 years ago.
No, I mean, you know, we know the advent of the 3-point shot and defense, you know, wipes out those 20 pointers. Oklahoma City came back from 29, I think, in game three against Memphis in round one. Halliburton did it all by, or, you know, he hit the big shots, but the Pacers did it at least five or six times, and other teams did it as well. And, you know, I can't remember how many times. I don't usually give up on games, but sometimes, you know, it's 17 in the fourth quarter and I want to check in on something else. And at least twice in the playoffs in games I was not working, I got a text from somebody, friend, colleague, that would say, "Wow, can you believe they're back in it?" And I'm like, "Oh, I didn't even know." And then I check in and it's a 2-point game with a minute to go. So that was kind of fun. It was a different and interesting way to do it. And I know the league didn't get great ratings for the finals, but I think people enjoyed the basketball of it. If you were a basketball fan, I think it was some good, pure basketball and some really great drama along the way.
This is Michael. Go ahead, Peter.
Good, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
I just wanted to congratulate you because I thought you and PJ did a magnificent job, because I felt like
really
I was on the court.
That was very
I felt like I was really on the court.
That's my goal is that when we're calling the games and PJ has so much to offer, and I always apologize in the breaks. I'm like, PJ, I'm sorry. I'm like being Mr. Gasbag, but I just love the art of the description. And I just imagine, you know, myself somewhere where I can't see the game, unable to see the game. And I just want to make sure others can. And so that's the highest compliment any of us could ever get. So I appreciate that.
That's what it's all about. Yeah, that's Mark. When you're on a television set and you want to depend on somebody to give you the information without you seeing it, it works well.
Well, I just did TV in Vegas for 3 days, which I normally don't do. And they play highlights, you know, on ESPN radio, some of the summer league games. And I'm like, it's a totally different art form. You know, you're not supposed to talk, you know, on the television side. And it always drives me crazy. I know, you know, apps and streaming television is the way of the future. But I have friends that will turn on the ESPN app and plug it into their car while they're driving. And I'm like, you're not getting the description that I would give you. So stop doing that, please.
I wanted to talk about the two teams that were in the finals, and the direction of those teams, especially the Pacers. Losing Turner, and Halliburton probably is not going to play this year, but Oklahoma City gave three max contracts to keep their team together. What do you see the direction of those two teams?
Yeah. Well, Oklahoma City's a little easier to describe because Sam Presti, their GM, has it like perfectly set up, assuming no one gets injured, and Chet Holmgren has had already a couple injuries. You know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's new deal kicks in 2 years. Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren, I believe they have one more year each on their rookie deals. So for the next year or two, those don't even count against, you know, the 200, whatever it is, $822 million combined of the three. So that allows the current guys that are on shorter deals like Lu Dort, Alex Caruso, Isaiah Hartenstein, you know, nothing changes. They bring everybody back. They have the same payroll. They're under the second apron and they could just run it back. And what gets interesting is when the Carusos leave and the Hartensteins leave and the Dorts leave, because they're not going to be able to pay them, you know, they would have to take discounts. And, you know, at that point, they're going to want to get paid at least once. Then the guys that they're drafting, and oh, by the way, they have 11 first round draft choices in the next 5-6 years, including the guys they just drafted who should be ready by then in 2 or 3 years. So they are so incredibly set up. I don't think any team ever has been set up, especially in the new age of, you know, a salary cap and luxury tax. And now these aprons where it restricts you from being able to make trades and dump salary. So Oklahoma City's in a great spot. Indiana's in an interesting spot because of Tyrese Halliburton having to miss an entire season coming up. And there's really no way around that. You know, they'd probably start Benedict Mathurin and move Nimhard over to point guard. And the East is not great. You know, we know that. So they're going to compete and they'll make some noise. Miles Turner leaving hurts, you know, but it's unfortunate, you know, to go to 7 games and lose your star point guard and knowing he's going to be gone for an entire season. So it's a little more complicated for Indiana, but they've built well and they're just going to have to kind of somehow patch it up and figure it out next year and, you know, see if they can get back to the finals.
Talk about a team and
Mark, I was going to ask you about a guy that, he was great at Arizona. He's been a disappointment since he's come into the league in the Lakers because there was nobody left, picked up DeAndre Ayton. Is he redeemable? Can he grow up and actually contribute to a decent Laker team next year or this season?
I think he can, and I agree with all the things you just said. It disappointed me, you know, how, I don't want to say how poorly he played, but, you know, he kind of disappeared in Portland, and you're supposed to be a professional anyway, depending on where you go, and maybe you're not happy with, you know, how things went down with Phoenix. But this is, to me, just a great opportunity, you know, whether you like Luka or you dislike Luka, his game is so good when you have an athletic big who he can, you know, lob to. And I just think if DeAndre Ayton plays this right, he is completely redeemable and exactly what the Lakers need. So now I just want to see what kind of shape he's in. And I suppose we could say the same thing about Luka, but you know, they've been looking for a center, an athletic center who can, you know, help rim protect as well. And he's got a lot of work in front of him to be good. But he's in a great situation if it works out, you know, health wise, and gets into the best shape of his life.
Peter, go ahead.
Yeah, well, Luka has lost 15 pounds and apparently isn't drinking beer.
That's what I heard.
And yeah,
he's got to
I'll drink his share.
October 21st as well. Like I'm all good at the summertime. I want to see I got to do it daily.
But Luka and DeAndre, that if the two of them have their heads in the game, that should be a good matchup.
I agree, 100%. I think that's going to be one of the bigger transactions if it all works out in the way that both those guys and Rob Pelinka hopes.
Peter, go ahead.
Can you make any sense of the Kevin Durant 18 trade?
You know what I love about that? And was it 8 or was it 7?
I think it was 7.
The record, but either way, it doesn't matter.
Seven.
I love that. I mean, I hate the moratorium because we do this whole dance at the draft with guys wearing hats that we know they're not going to those teams, but they have to do it for league business purposes. And then you have all these deals done, and then you get the smart guys, you know, the NBA nerds in the front office that don't see the light of day. They have no windows in their office, and they're allowed out once a day. And all they do is figure out, how can we make the money work or the picks work that we can get involved in this trade? And that's exactly what happened. It's like a third of the league got together and figured out, okay, we have this trade, you have that trade, they have that trade. If we all come together, we get some more beneficial parts, whether it's cash or picks or whatever. So that's the only way I can make out of it, except to say I'm sure early in the season, I'm just going to mention 7-team trade. I don't even think I said it at Summer League on the air. I should have. We could have had a lot of fun with that, but That's so ridiculous when I saw that come out. 7 teams, but let's see, there were 2 teams involved in the original, so 5 other teams got some benefit out of that.
I can't even keep track of who went where,
oh, you know,
except where
either.
Durant went.
And I had such a lack of understanding that I remember looking, I had 11 different teams in my 3 days at Summer League, and I said, I'm going to make it a point to mention every team I have that was part of the Kevin Durant trade. And then of course I completely forgot to do it because we had 18 million other things to do, but that would have been fun. Another team who was involved in the Kevin Durant trade, but I didn't quite execute it well.
So do you have any sense as to who benefited from this trade? I mean, how do you assess who did well and who maybe didn't do so well?
I think, well, Houston did well. That's the easy part for me because I'm trying to think of all the moving parts. Phoenix needed the relief. I mean, they were going nowhere with those contracts, and I don't know if Bradley Beal's getting bought out, and he probably will from what I'm hearing. So that, you know, the owner who's got a ton of dough will pay for that, you know, whether, you know, they buy him out, stretch him, whatever. But the point being is that now they could start over again. And that's like gold in the NBA, when you can just reconstruct, try to draft better, manage your cap, because you can't put these super teams together anymore. I think Phoenix was the last team to learn that.
And so who got Dylan Brooks and Jalen Green?
That was Phoenix.
And I thought so.
Phoenix.
Yeah, so I think Jalen Green's a good player. He's young. That's a guy you can build around if he reaches his potential in any way or form. Dylan Brooks not going to be there when Phoenix gets good, but, you know, maybe they try to make a run. I mean, the play-in in the West, forget it. I mean, Phoenix last year had all those names and couldn't make the play-in. So it's, and San Antonio's going to be good this year. So they didn't make the play-in either. So Phoenix is, you know, they're better off. If they can get rid of Bradley Beal, they already got rid of Kevin Durant. They have committed Bucco Bucks to Devin Booker. So they just got to build around him. And this was beneficial. All the other parts in that 17 trade were just trades that were already executed and guys just glommed on to, you know, get a few other draft picks or some cash. But Houston, to me, the big beneficiary. I really liked that team. It needed, you know, some scoring punch and a guy who could score at the end. And I know Durant's 37 or something like that, but he still has a little gas in the tank. So short term, good for Houston, and then long term, good for Phoenix so they could start their rebuild.
All right. Now I'm a Celtics fan, and I know they kind of semi blew it up in the offseason. They unloaded Holiday. They unloaded Porzingis. Horford's a free agent. And on and on and on, but they're not getting back a supreme big man in all of their dealings, and I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, this is a backward step for them, and they had to do it because they're just, you know, with the sale of the club coming up and, you know, financial responsibility, you know, the amount of money they were paying in luxury tax and other cap issue problems. So, and Luke Kornet was, you know, a great development piece and find, and he's already gone to San Antonio. I'd forgotten where Robert Williams was until I did a Blazers game the other day, and I'm like, oh, that's where he is, in Portland. Like DeAndre Ayton, he just disappeared when you go to Portland, apparently. It'll be fascinating to see. Everyone's giving up on Boston, you know, when we talk about that the East is wide open, the premise being that, you know, the Knicks are good, but they're not that good, and the Celtics are selling off, you know, two of their big five, and Jason Tatum's not going to play next year, or at least most of the year. I can't imagine they'll play at all next year, but, you know, we'll see what happens there. And Cleveland, you know, had the great year and then bowed out in the second round to Indiana. So the East is still winnable with what they have, I guess, but it's not going to be. It's amazing. You know, Sean Grandy, who's the longtime radio voice of the Celtics, we were sitting next to their broadcast at the Garden, game six, when it ended for Boston. And obviously Tatum went down with the injury, which we all assumed and then turned out to be right, was his Achilles. And I remember Sean had enough, you know, presence of mind on the way out to say to me, isn't it amazing in the blink of an eye how fast a dynasty can close? And I was like, I'm trying to process the whole thing. And he was so far ahead of me on that one. I mean, literally, the Celtics had this window where they could win multiple championships, and now it's gone. Like, you know, maybe they'll still compete and they have a chance to win, but not what it looked like, you know, for the last couple of years.
I would say that
this year is a lost cause for the Celtics, but maybe next year when Tatum is back and they can make some other moves, they might, you know, be back again on their window.
That's conceivable. I would like to bring some other participants in on the show if they are listening. We are Sports Roundtable, as you know, and our featured guest is Mark Kestacher of ESPN Radio. So if anybody has a question for Mark or for any of us, please feel free to raise your hand. And in the meantime, let me ask Diane if there are any hands raised.
No, Bob, there are none.
Okay, well, just let us know when that happens.
Diane. I'm so Thank popular you. That everyone okay. wants to talk to me.
So, Mark, let's, at the risk of well, no. What are your thoughts? I know college football's not that far away.
You know,
what are your thoughts about what might happen during the college football season?
It's so funny you say that because, you know, I told my wife for months, I said, my summer starts when my summer league stint ends, and that was yesterday. And I'm like, I'm not doing anything for a month unless they call me into work. You know, don't bother me. I'll be at a pool or at a beach. And guess what I was doing at 9 a.m. this morning? I was opening up my college football prospectus and looking at the teams that I'll have on opening day. And it's like, it's a disease. It's a great disease. It's why we all kind of get into this, you know, sports business, because we live it, we love it, and it never ends. And I couldn't even take 3 hours, you know, to just unplug. I was already getting into college football. So a long introduction to say, funny you bring that up, because, you know, I really wasn't paying attention much. I know the SEC media days are going on. Ian Fitzsimmons is our reporter. You guys probably know him for his ESPN radio talk show at night. And he's in Atlanta and he's sending us interviews because he's just, you know, knocking them out one after the other. And it's fascinating. It's a little disappointing to me personally that it's become so SEC and Big Ten heavy, but it's kind of the nature of where we kind of saw this thing going. You know, the big storyline obviously is what the playoff's going to look like after. We know this year is the same as last, except the seeding things. They've taken care of that. But the start of the 26 season next year, will we have an expanded field? How many automatics from those two big conferences will be in there? That's all being decided. But in the meantime, you know, I need to see Arch Manning and Texas play. Everybody's, you know, crowning them, you know, early season, and Arch could be, you know, the next great one, but, you know, we really haven't seen it. He was in spot duty with Quinn Ewers at the controls. And, you know, it's a lot of the same faces in different places. Ohio State, you know, is going to be good. Penn State, we have Penn State, Oregon on our ESPN radio schedule. That's a really good September game, late in September. You know, Penn State has their quarterback, couple of running backs back. You know, so there's some really good stories out there. LSU. Oh, Ducks. Yeah, the Ducks, Notre Dame. I mean, it's kind of the same cast of characters. I'm always fascinated. We do this preseason top 25, and then you get into the season. There's always a disappointment or two, like Florida State last year would be the prime example. And then there's always, you know, teams that you're like, oh, didn't see that coming. You know, Boise State obviously had the great run in a smaller conference. We have an SMU game. SMU had a really good, they were in the ACC championship game last year, made the playoff as well. So I haven't dug in too deeply, but I'm very intrigued by the college football season to come, and even more intrigued just because, you know, like the NCAA men's basketball tournament might be expanding into the 70s of teams amounted. You know, I always thought college football should be 16, like a true, you know, playoff, like they have in Division III, and I think the old 1AA as well.
I think the FCS does it with the.
Yeah, they do. So, you know, I just hate the fact that it's, you know, it's become so money driven, and, you know, if you were at a big school with a giant quote unquote collective, I love that name, the collective.
And a few of those schools are shutting their collectives down. From what I heard over the weekend, there's a few of them that are shutting their collectives down.
Yeah, well, I hope.
I guess.
Hey, Luther, good to hear your voice. Yeah, I hope my alma mater of Syracuse, they don't shut it down, but, you know, it's hard to compete with the big boys these days.
Speaking of Syracuse, where do you think the Orange with Fran Brown, where do you think their, you know, arrow is headed? Because I know for me, it feels like it's pointing due north, but right now I'm not sure.
Well, I will give you my unbiased opinion that I agree with you. Yeah, there's some slight bias in there. I think it's pointing, I don't think it's ACC championship due north, but I think they could contend in the conference. Yeah. And I have their opener. Wins,
maybe
I have, they open with Tennessee in Atlanta. Wow.
And you're going to get to see Mike Keith, the new voice of the Vols, by the way.
That's right. I forgot about that. I saw Bob Kessling at least 3 times last year, including his finale at Ohio State in the first round. I don't know Mike, so that'll be nice to meet him.
You're going to enjoy him. I mean, I haven't met him, but I've talked to him a few times. It's going to be him, Ramon Foster, and Jason Swain on the Vol broadcast with Larry Stone back at his on-site engineering / game day hosting duties.
Look at this. When I was the studio host, I used to know every broadcaster, and now that I'm one of the play-by-play guys, I don't know anybody.
Yeah, let me put it this way. You went from the outsider that knew nothing to in the fraternity and knowing jack squat.
That's exactly right. And yet they still come up and say hello to me anyway. I got hit on the back so many times over the 3 days in Vegas. And I'm like, who keeps punching me? And, you know, one time it was Chauncey Billups, who I really don't know that well, but
right.
He remembered me from ESPN. Terry Stotts, who was George Karl's assistant on the very first radio play-by-play that I did in the CBA with the Albany Patroons back in 1990.
You were in the CBA?
Whoa. I started in the CBA. Mario Elie was on our
Lord,
team.
I remember Mario Elie with the Spurs. I think he's doing TV now.
Albert King was on our team. We were 50-6. 50-5-0 and 6. We didn't win the championship because our starting five all got called up to the NBA right before the playoffs. And because of that, to go full circle here, Terry Stotts had to play. He was an assistant coach, but we needed a player. And he was in his early mid-30s.
And, and kudos to you with your also another alumni broadcast team with the Albany Firebirds going in AF1 this year.
That's right. I did the first 6 years of the Firebirds in Albany. We were like the Green Bay Packers of the Arena Football League. Small teeny market, sold out. And we made it to the Arena Bowl. Always lost to Tampa Bay every year.
Let me put it this way. When you were in the Arena League, it was Tampa, it was Orlando, it was
You remember who the quarterback of Tampa was?
Oh God. Jay Gruden?
You got it. Jay Gruden.
Jay Gruden, yeah.
Hey Mark, you mentioned the CBA, and I've had this sense for years that Isaiah Thomas destroyed the CBA.
Yes.
He destroyed the Knicks too.
He did too.
I don't know if that's a fact or not, but I know that whatever he did, you know, trying to prop up the CBA or make it better, they ended up basically, you know, defunct. So yeah, he gets credit for driving the CBA right into the mountainside.
He was the last commissioner, if I recall correctly.
I think he was.
Yeah, but he was. Another guy who smacked me on the back, by the way, an Albany Patroons alumnus, Scotty Brooks, played.
Oh, Scotty Brooks used to be the coach of the OKC Thunder and then the Washington Wizards. And I don't even know if he's even in line for a head coach job or anything.
He's on JJ Redick's bench. He and, Nate McMillan. So they're kind of trust for the
Seattle Supersonics.
Didn't he play for the then San Diego Clippers?
Scotty
Brooks.
He might have. No. They were in LA in the early 80s, so he probably not, because he was in Albany in 88 when they won the CBA title.
Didn't San Diego, when Sterling, the idiotic baboon, picked them up when the beloved and talented Sterling Affairs came out, when he purchased that moribund franchise in 1981 and bought it and then moved him to LA, and then they had to basically, you know, be the little stepchild sisters of the poor with the fakers in the old Staples Center?
They still are. In many ways.
Well, now they have their own dome building.
I finally got to it in April for a first round playoff game. But still, they're still so far below. I mean, the Lakers are, you know, for obvious, they're on top of basketball.
The Clippers are to the Lakers as the Angels are to the Dodgers, and neither of those situations will change.
I have a trivia question.
The A's were closer to the Giants, but they're now
The A's are now the vagabonds until they decide if they ever get that.
I went by the sandbox where they supposedly put shovels in the other day. So I'm trying to,
you know what some people call the Athletics right now? The Oaklamento Athletics.
I like it. They should use that, because right now they're just Athletics.
Oh, trivia. Let's hear some trivia.
Okay. Yeah. Talking about the Clippers, does anybody remember who the Clippers were when they joined the NBA?
Buffalo Braves.
And the Buffalo Braves.
The late
D. Gregorio and company.
Let me put it this way. Yeah. You can't go wrong when you have a late great Dr. Jack reference in anything.
And you know Mark Stein, who worked with us forever.
Oh yes.
He was the biggest Buffalo Braves fan, and he got to work with Dr. Jack. God bless his soul. Mark still has because great colors. It was like orange and black. He still has like some Buffalo Braves paraphernalia. It's almost like here where I live in Connecticut, everyone still wears Hartford Whalers green and blue. The team has been here 30 years.
The Hartford Whalers. Cool stuff. The Hartford Whalers.
By the way, Mark, you're talking about going by where the new stadium is. I go to Vegas a couple of times a year, and my wife and I are both blind, and we used to take the Deuce, the double-decker bus, at the bus stop right near the Tropicana. And when they announced where they were putting that stadium in, I was thinking, the traffic on Las Vegas Boulevard is horrendous now. I can only imagine what it's going to be like.
It'll be
gridlock like 12 hours, 15 hours a day.
You cannot get around. I'm so happy. ESPN puts us at the Virgin Hotel, which is off the strip, close to Thomas and Mack at UNLV.
Oh, and the T-Mac, where the Mountain West, where they had for a long time. Where the Mountain West Conference men's basketball tournament used to be.
And now just to get to places on the strip, I always go out a day early so I can get to some practices. And they're like, one team's at Resorts World, another team is here. I'm like, okay, I'll go to Resorts World. You're across the street. I'll be there in 5 minutes. It's like, it's a 30-minute walk to get anywhere, and you can't walk on the street anymore. They've got all the walkways above the city and
blocked
street line. And on top of it, since they welcomed in the F1 people.
The Formula One
has been that much worse. Whenever there's Formula One stuff going on,
the road courses and all that stuff. Yeah. Oh my God. Wow.
The locals were not happy with that. The couple we talked to either this trip or a couple of years ago, they were not happy. It messed things up big time on the strip.
I wonder what's going to happen when they put that new stadium in Las Vegas. What's going to happen to the Las Vegas Aviators, even though they're, you know, not that close to where this new ballpark's going to be. I wonder if the Las Vegas team will pick up the Aviators and basically make them their next door neighbors so they don't have to go far for their players. I wonder if there's going to come to a point where the Aviators.
My money is they will go to one of two former ECL sites. So either go to Portland or Tucson.
I haven't heard Tucson or Portland, because I think I heard Portland maybe trying to get the Beavers back, but I don't know if the Tucson Sidewinders or Toros will ever be back in the Pacific Coast League, because the Pacific Coast League ain't got many teams like they used to be. I mean, I know they got Round Rock and, you know, Las Vegas.
They're 10 teams.
They got 10, and the International League's got, they've doubled that. They got 20 when they added the old PCL alumni with Memphis, Iowa, Nashville, and a few other teams that were in the International League. Some of the OGs of the International League, Indianapolis and Charlotte and Toledo. And now they've got it shifted to the north and the south in the International League. So you're not going to play everybody in that league.
Mark, we have five minutes, by the way.
Thank you. I'm curious about something. I've been thinking about this, and with your involvement in the MAA draft.
I think
the same is true with the NFL and the MLB too. I suspect there are going to be fewer people coming out early of college now that college athletes can get paid. Do you think that's going to reduce the number of folks coming out early? And, you know, why would they come out early if they're going to get paid millions of dollars and they can, you know, continue to get better at the college level?
I think we lost his iPhone, but I was going to ask him with the NBA, you know, with this third apron basically becoming the NBA's salary cap, with these teams having to make these humongous decisions, you know, early with Williams, with Oklahoma City getting their Supermax rookie deal, with SGA and Chet Holmgren getting their Supermaxes, like how much of a factor is the third apron going to allow teams to keep some of those guys that help them win the championship compared to other teams that are literally having to pick and choose who they keep and who they can't keep because of the third apron?
But another factor, though, they have finally, it's about time, put some restrictions on what colleges can do with NIL.
Yeah, exactly.
So it may not be quite as Wild West as it was.
I apologize. I got booted off. How about that?
Well, we were into Mark Pete was asking about like Pete, just follow up with your question, because I couldn't have phrased it, but I was also asking about the third apron with the NBA with, you know, Williams getting his Supermax with his new rookie deal, with SGA and Chet Holmgren getting their Supermaxes. Like, how big is it going to factor in on teams being able to keep the guys that helped them want to win a championship, or, you know, part of a team that's on the ascension up? Like, how do they determine who they keep and who they let go with this third apron when you're pressing right up against that third apron with the third rail of the CBA?
Yeah, we covered some of that ground earlier before you came in. Basically,
yeah.
I was saying that they've set it up so perfectly because a lot of those, the big Supermax 2 years away for SGA from starting, mm-hmm. and the other two still have a year on their rookie deal. So yep. really for the next year or two, they can kind of run it back, but they have to develop all these yeah. great draft picks they have, and then the mm-hmm. Dorts will leave, and the Hartensteins will end up leaving.
And the Carusos, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the key, is can they develop the rest of the team around those three to be as good? But next year, it's like three straight championship years under the luxury tax, unheard of, right, in the luxury tax era.
Mm-hmm.
So
Peter yeah. was asking you about college athletes leaving early now that they can get paid. We have about 30 seconds, by the way, but what is your thought about that?
It's interesting in basketball. It's almost like you're better off staying in school.
Yep.
Because the game mm-hmm. has changed so much, especially for a big, like a yeah. traditional big is better off playing 5 years or 4 years, whatever, and making NIL. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, maybe end up going to Europe or you get a cup of coffee in the NBA. So to me, that's interesting. The first round are the 18-year-olds who have great upside, and the second round are the 4 and 5 year players who you could just throw in right away and are already developed and ready to go. So, there's this big, right now we have, you know, the ability to make money in college to supplement if you're not going to have a long career. And then you got the other guys who, if they hit, because not all these first rounders.
And that's a big if right there.
It's a big if. How many second rounders did, you know, we talk about that last year that this year are rotation guys? So,
by the way, there in the NFL, from what I heard today, I know we're running out of time.
We have
30
seconds left.
We've got 30 second round picks that have not been signed yet.
Unbelievable. Mark, thank you so much for coming back to our show and participating. And
I'll give you the full 60 minutes next time. We only did like 40 this time. My apologies.
Well, I'm sure you intended that today, but things happen.
Things happen.
I'm only going to take 60% of the check you're sending today. Yeah. I'll send back the other 40.
Take care, guys. Thank you, everybody. And, We'll see you later. Go safe with God's abundant blessings. Take care, everybody.